So there is a great illusion due to our earth-boundedness and the fullness of these, the meaning of these great constellations is understood in a very circumscribed manner. We are not really able to see beyond our own planetary ring pass, not the true scope of the conditioning influences. If we were on the sun, if we were truly solar beings, we'd understand the full scope of Gemini, Aries, Scorpio, Virgo in a much different way. And if we were somehow within those constellations themselves, then the true nature of the constellation in fullness would have the chance of being revealed to us. So this business about revolve around the Earth is an illusion, of course, but we're talking about the great illusion. And let's see, one aspect of the great illusion, one aspect of the great illusion is that the greater sources, or let's just call them astronomical sources, revolve around our little planet. It's somewhat psychologically true. That's how we self-reference, or we refer to our planet as the center of all things. We need to become decentralized for a truer understanding of the great sources. So, when man has progressed further and his consciousness is beginning to awaken to reality, and I would say always involving a measure of decentralization, the nature of this illusion will become apparent to him. It's ahamkara, it's egocentricity, it's planetary centricity, it's even solar systemic centricity. What really is the center? Well, you kind of wonder whether there's a center anywhere. You know, God is this intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. Well, that's another philosophical issue. Is there a circumference to the universe? I'd like to say there is a perceptual circumference, that which is not self-perceived by the universal logos does not exist. But that would take us off on kind of a third-rate tangent, and I don't want to go there. It could take hours. But at present, this is not possible. Even theoretically, it is not possible. When man has progressed further and his consciousness is beginning to awaken to reality, the nature of illusion will become apparent to him because, you know, DK says, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. The old commentary says that. You have to come forth into the light of day and display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, i.e. the monad, the glory of the one and only. Until the ninth initiation, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. And even then, there will be correspondences or aspects of the supercosmic planes which will be relatively etheric physical. And then will they be illusory compared to what could be perceived on the higher supercosmic planes? You know, if you follow analogy, it would be so. Okay. So the nature of this illusion will become apparent to him, but at present this is not possible. Even theoretically, it's not possible. Study, for instance, what I can still further add as to the influence of these related constellations and see whether it truly conveys to you any exact knowledge beyond a general idea of focused energies and related forces. So let me therefore add, and let's just see if he has any further diagrams. No, not immediately. We don't have further diagrams immediately. So let me further add here on page 360 that the influence of Mercury as it relates Aries and Gemini to our Earth establishes in time and space a unique situation. In time and space, Are we then speaking about the cosmic physical plane, or are we speaking of even lower planes, the dense physical levels of the planetary logos, the lower 18 subplanes? Establishes in time and space a unique situation for insights. That's a very Aries word. To trial efforts, experiments, or initiates a series of beginnings in order to relate opposing forces and produce certain planned and definite effects upon our planet, thus influencing the kingdoms of nature or an individual soul and form. So is this conveying to us anything exact? Well, maybe not. But anyway, the word incitation is like a spark producing action. This is an Aries word. To trial efforts, which are, you know, experiments. And Aries says, well, let's at least try this. Experiments. Or initiates a series of beginnings, again Aries, in order to. So basically what we have here is that Aries leads to Geminian and Mercurian interplay. Leads to Geminian and Mercurian interplay. So it incites to a series of to trial efforts or initiates a series of beginnings in order to relate opposing forces as found in Gemini and Mercury and produce certain planned and definite effects upon our planet. Well, relations, or let's say induced relations, have to eventually reflect archetypal patterns. So the pattern of pure reason is an archetypal pattern, but that is not yet found in our lower worlds. So the types of relationships which have to be created will reflect an archetype. But first there has to be the interplay, the conflicts, before these archetypal rearrangements or reflections of archetypes can be produced in the lower worlds, not only for man, but for the kingdom. So a conflict is thus initiated. So think of the conflict. Well, Aries has plenty of conflict in it, too. But we've been talking about Mercury as the star of conflict, and we've been talking about Gemini as producing conflicts between the pairs of opposites, the warring nature between the higher and the lower. So a conflict is thus initiated, which leads finally to balance. And as we have learned in Esoteric Astrology, page 332, that Gemini moves towards Libra. Okay, so that's what we would want to say there, wouldn't we? Well, I can't copy that. But Gemini moves towards Libra. I'll put that in. Gemini has a kind of relationship which is a kind of dynamic which is carried a step further in Virgo and also in Libra. Greater integration in Virgo, greater fusion and merging in Libra. So Aries, Gemini, Mercury, Earth, a conflict is set up which leads, after some initial beginnings and trial efforts, to a situation of balance or relative stasis. Okay, balance or relative. I keep on looking for the formula. Okay. So Gemini leads to Libra. Now, looking back here at page 360, maybe we see that. Yes, this leads to an intermediate consummation in Libra. And yes, okay. Intermediate consummations and final consummations. Remember, we talked about final consummations related to the pairs of opposites 180 degrees apart. But the relationships found on page 332 and 333 are intermediate in their nature, and they do not indicate a complete consummation. They are called by the interesting name intermediate consummation. So that's what's meant by Gemini moves towards Libra for an intermediate consummation. So let's say that, I don't want that, do I? We'll say that the relationships given, the zodiacal relationships given on pages 332 and 333 are intermediate consummations and not final consummations. He gives us a little bit of insight there, doesn't he? He says it's not a true consummation. He said that earlier, but he never called them intermediate consummations, which is a most interesting type of term. When it says Aries turns towards Capricorn, presumably that would be an intermediate consummation, but not the full consummation related to the Great Bear when Aries and Libra become, in a way, one sign. Now, Mercury as it relates to Virgo. Okay, let's see about that. The influence of Mercury as it relates to Virgo and Gemini, well, you kind of wonder, would these constellations, being members of a group in the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, not be automatically related to each other anyway? But perhaps we're talking about relating the constellations to each other with respect to our planet, and not how they are on their own high level related to each other in the structure in which they form a kind of group entity. The influence of Mercury as it relates Virgo and Gemini is to condition the soul within the form, to affect, to nurture, to increase the strength of the soul within the form, and subject it, notice the word subject and subject. Subject is the verb and subject is the noun, but all subjects are subjected or have something to which they are subject. Is to condition the soul within the form and subject it to those influences which will lead to the intensification of the ordinary evolutionary process. That is just what I was saying before, because Mercury is an orthodox ruler of Virgo, but of course also an exalted planet. So the results are more outward, because we're dealing with Mercury as the orthodox ruler, mediating, I suppose, those aspects of Virgo which would relate to outer circumstances. If the moon veiling Vulcan and Neptune were mediating Virgo, outer circumstances would not be so involved. It would be the inner Christ and the endurance over time leading to the birth of the Christ. And if Jupiter were mediating Virgo in relation to our planet, I see the science of triangles is implied here, the result would be very inward indeed, because Jupiter has the mass effect of bringing about the pervasive Christ consciousness in all substance, I suppose. So, the intensification of the ordinary evolutionary process, and the consequent waxing of the soul light and the waning of the light of matter itself. But isn't that, that's such a Geminian thing, isn't it? This waxing and waning, we learn that the terms waxing, maybe I put, and, oh, let's do that right. try not to type too fast. Waxing and waning refer not only to Gemini, but to Virgo as well. So there is, within a small space, a fused and integrated space, the waxing and waning of the light of soul and the light of matter. Virgo is causing a kind of compression, which Gemini itself would never allow, insisting more on freedom and the distance of the pairs of opposites from each other. So the influence of Mercury as it relates Virgo and Gemini is to condition the soul within the form, because it's already within the form. It's not just in interplay with the form, as in Gemini, and subject it to those influences which will lead to the intensification of the ordinary evolutionary process. I mean, Virgo was, after all, quite a material sign related to the previous solar system that had a lot of the third ray within it. And the evolution of matter, as well as soul, is important. And the consequent waxing of the soul light and the waning of the light in matter itself. So the dark light of Cancer is brought forward into, it does wane. Okay, it does wane. So the soul light is increasing, but I'm also thinking that the quality of the material light will be improved. Eventually, under Vulcan, which is also a Virgoan planet, that dark light has to become radiant. This initiates the struggle. Notice how the word struggle is always involved here when dealing with this star of conflict, as it mediates and brings in the energies of the constellations to which it is related. This initiates the struggle which, in a human being, is consciously realized as being between soul and personality. So Virgo is involved in this conflict between soul and personality, and not just Gemini, although Gemini is present and is probably assisting to bring about this struggle. So we had the will to be when Aries was involved, initiating various beginnings which had to come to a balance. And now we have the struggle between soul and personality within the rapidly fusing soul personality. And this leads to a final stage in Capricorn, where the soul, through initiation, is truly triumphant. So maybe an intermediate consummation may be involved here, only it's not one of the ones that we are talking about, because Virgo, although related to Capricorn, is not mentioned on page 332 or 333 in terms of its relation to Capricorn or movement towards Capricorn. So this leads to a final stage in Capricorn, an initiated stage, but here the soul is gaining the upper hand through its waxing light, and this within the field of integration. So let's just put that down, that within the field of integration, the soul is gaining the proverbial upper hand. And the dark light of matter will become increasingly radiant, but its influence has to wane, at least temporarily. Then later, that dark light will shine forth. So, a final stage in Capricorn. Going on that, he seems to be going back and forth. He talks about the Scorpio hierarchical connection is being pervasive and difficult to pin down. The relationship of Virgo to Gemini and Mercury as being more exoteric, perhaps, and dealing with the intensification of the ordinary evolutionary process. And he deals with the emergence of the will to be and the will to initiate and so forth, producing the presence of the of conflicts, which will lead to equilibrization in Libra. Not easy stuff, this. The influence of Mercury, as it relates Scorpio to Gemini, is to inaugurate that final stage of consciousness which will place the soul within the form, surely in the place of power. This is called triumph. It will place the soul within the form, because it's, you know, the hierarchical, Mercury's the hierarchical ruler here. Actually, you have two hierarchical rulers involved, don't you? Let's put that down. Two hierarchical rulers are here involved. Gemini is the hierarchical ruler of Earth. The other way around. Earth, the hierarchical ruler of Gemini, and Mercury, the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio. So there is triumph on the Buddhic plane here, not just the beginnings inducing relationship, not just the emerging of the Christ force through initiation, but final triumph. Place the soul within the form, surely in the place of power, swinging the earlier achieved balance under Libra. Okay, under Libra, and control, balance and control, definitely into the realm of the soul. So it's as if this triangle, it is as if this triangle involving Scorpio has a higher function than the triangle involving Aries. So if we were to hierarchicalize these triangles, we might consider Virgo as the first, involving an orthodox ruler, Aries as the second, involving an esoteric ruler, and the Scorpio triangle in the third position, involving a hierarchical ruler. We'll place the soul within the form, surely in the place of power, swinging the earlier achieved balance, remember, induced by the conflicts which Aries promoted, definitely into the realm of the soul. It is this which, in the Scorpio experience, produces the terrific, you know, maybe involving terror even, because DK doesn't use words loosely, the terrific experience of the disciple, and which at this time is one of the predisposing causes of the present world conflict. Scorpio is the major distributor of the fourth ray, and the disciple is in a state of conflict, and the disciples are emerging, and humanity is becoming the world disciple. The world disciple, one, singular. So the balance, always in Libra, we have a choice about whether we are to go backwards into Virgo or forward into Scorpio, and this triangle helps us move forward into Scorpio and puts the disciple in a great state of conflict between soul and personality, perhaps the most intense state of conflict, and the disciples' conflict is reflected in humanity's conflict, since humanity is becoming the world disciple, or maybe even is, in a sense, the world disciple. It is of interest to note where the cursor is. Okay, it is of interest to note that the struggle is going to be conditioned primarily by decisions arrived at in London, which is ruled by Gemini. And let's see. Let's take a look at that, if we can. So it's London, Gemini, Leo. Oh, maybe just London, Gemini. And there maybe are going to be two places where this is found. London, ruled by Gemini. Now, somewhere I had the impression there was a Leo connection there, but maybe not. Well, London then is ruled by the sign Gemini, and so is the soul of Great Britain. So the soul of Great Britain is in a unique position to work through London as a center of focus. The second ray impulse should be coming forth. The soul of Great Britain is a second ray soul connected with the sign Gemini, and London is a sort of fifth ray, seventh ray center, but conditioned by Gemini, which also relates to the second ray. All right. It is of interest to note that the struggle going on in humanity and on the planet, I suppose, is going to be conditioned primarily by decisions arrived at in London, which is ruled by Gemini, and in the United States, which is also governed by Gemini in a lower, on a lower turn of the spiral, turn of the spiral. Well, I'll spell it out. I have a higher turn of the spiral. I have that. But I don't have lower turn of the spiral. I don't have turn of the spiral. I'll have to remember that. Okay, one day, if these are ever useful, the editors can cut out such nonsense as was just spoken. So, that which can resolve these terrible conflicts going on in humanity and even on our planet will be originating in decisions, and I suppose decisions within the human family arrived at in London and in the United States, whose personality is ruled by Gemini. Of course, one day masters will be positioned in those five planetary centers, including London, so perhaps decisions by masters and by their disciples may also be involved. Humanity is now upon the path of discipleship. Another way of saying, also saying, that humanity is under Scorpio, the sign of discipleship. So humanity is on the conflicted path at the moment, and there is a great battle going on before its first initiation. This implies that the path of discipleship precedes the first initiation. Now, sometimes we are told, or it is implied, that there is no true path until the first initiation is taken. But a statement like this seems to tell us that the path of discipleship on which humanity finds itself at this time precedes the path of initiation on which it will be shortly when the Christ reappears, indicating that humanity has indeed taken the first initiation, at least a requisite number of human beings to create a sufficient energy change within the aura of humanity. So humanity is now upon the path of discipleship, as I have frequently told you, and Scorpio rules that path, so Scorpio is really ruling the path that humanity is treading. And Gemini governs the way of many changes. That is so important a phrase, the way of many changes, which allows us to learn something of our environment and be exposed to the many divided factors, apparently divided within our environment, so we can come in proper rapport with them. So as I frequently told you, and Scorpio rules that path, so the struggles of humanity, the wars, these are indicated of its emergence onto the path of discipleship. Gemini governs the way of many changes, which conditions the struggle which began in Aries. So in a way we have a sequence here, a sequence of Aries, Gemini, Scorpio. We'll see where I have to put Virgo here. Focused in Cancer, which conditions the struggle which began in Aries, focused in Cancer, is brought to a crisis in Scorpio and ended in Capricorn. Okay, we're no longer dealing with the particular signs that Mercury is involved with, But you can see that the will to incarnate, the will to initiate a new beginning, an incarnation, let us say, with the embryonic reorganized inner life, begins in Aries and focuses through incarnation and submergence in the elemental kingdoms in Cancer, goes into a stage of conflict. The higher the conflict with duality appears in Scorpio, and the higher the pairs of opposites must win, and finally does win, through the final trials of Capricorn. The victory, the more final victory, is found in Capricorn as a of the trials they're experienced. So here we have the sequence, Aries, Cancer, Scorpio, Capricorn. When Gemini, Scorpio, and Mercury are correctly related, we shall see the United States moving also onto the path of discipleship. Now, does that mean that England already is? This has not yet occurred. Through the release, a release from its present self-centered policy, which is this is always the way of the aspirant. That is pretty much what America is at the moment, the aspirant, and it has a lot of sixth ray to correspond with the path of aspiration. It probably has a fourth ray mind as well to correspond with that path. Six and fourth rays found upon the path of aspiration. It's well-meaning evasion of responsibility, and that's one of the things that Gemini and Mercury can do. They can evade responsibility, and it's innate fears and distrust. And where's that coming from? You know, the negative reflection of the second ray energy, of the second ray energy, and let's see. And also its Cancerian nature, its July 4th birthday, which is a sign of fear and distrust. Cancer, fear and distrust. So the United States is not yet on the path of discipleship. It's a Gemini personality country. But Great Britain is a Gemini soul country, and so in a way, the U.S. will have to look to Great Britain to reveal the ways in which its Gemini energy can be used in a more disciplic manner. When the focus of the power in London is also rightly oriented and is released into increased effectiveness by a drastic purgation of motive, meaning the acquisitional motive of Taurus, the personality sign of Great Britain, must be released. Acquisitional motive. And we see that in much of how Great Britain, or especially England, has behaved under the influence of what's called John Bull, acquiring colonies and riches from those colonies and having ownership over much of the world in its day. So when the focus of the power in London is also rightly oriented and is released into increased effectiveness by drastic purification of motive, which would be must be released, selflessness, increased selflessness, then the united effect of both of these clarifications will be human liberation. So what a responsibility, right? Placed upon America and Great Britain. These facts are being slowly realized in London ahead of the realization which is more slowly awakening the states. Now remember, as I'm understanding, when this was written, it was in the 1930s, the Great War. Well, the Great War was from 1914 to 1945, but the second phase of that war had not yet occurred, and we wonder if we're not in the third phase, at least psychologically, of that war now. These are drastic purgations. They are scorpionic events. Humanity, the disciple under Scorpio, may go through three phases of war, as the third phase always seems to be climactic. Then there was a drastic purgation, and we might say that Great Britain, after the war, lost many of its Taurian acquisitions. So there was a release there of the financial motive, especially when combined with the first-ray personality, the will to have. Was very strong. But the will to love is coming in stronger now with Gemini and the second ray. I think we begin to see the implications on a worldwide basis of this sign Gemini, which is so important in connecting in right relations all the various nations and groups and disciples and eventually all human beings. These potencies, when effective, lead to true service in Aquarius. Again, this is not an, what did he call it, intermediate consummation? Is that what it was? Let's look up the word consummation. Whoops, I went too far. Yes, that was it. The term was intermediate consummation, but if we talk here about movement towards Aquarius, we have Scorpio, discipleship, Gemini, Scorpio, and Mercury. So we have three things. It's kind of like this. This is not even an intermediate consummation, as found on 332 and 333. So let's summarize here. We had Aries leading to Libra. We had I think that was correct. We had Virgo leading to Capricorn, and we have Scorpio leading to Aquarius. So these potencies, which were here, Gemini, Scorpio, Mercury, when effective, lead to true service in Aquarius. In other words, when the disciple is truly triumphant, there will be this the development of true service in Aquarius. So DK has been is dealing with abstruse matters here. We're talking about Gemini, Scorpio, and Mercury in relation to the United States and also to London and to Great Britain. And what is the motto? The motto. What is the motto of Great Britain? What is the motto of Great Britain? Is, I believe, and maybe it's London involved, I serve. And for the United States, I light the way. And Aquarius is that type of light which shines on Earth across the sea. So a great release of radiation and light in true service will come when the Scorpio, Gemini, Scorpio, Mercury triangle is efficiently functioning in relation to the decisions made within London and Great Britain and in the United States. When will this come? Well, it probably has a lot to do with the reappearance of the Christ and the Geminian nature of the Christ, or at least he taking his seventh initiation, in process of taking that seventh initiation, which is an initiation of a very, very high point of realize and express love, a kind of a climax of the love energy. This seventh degree of which he is in process will make the sign Gemini, so related to the age of Aquarius, very, very important in producing true brotherhood. Liberty, equality, fraternity. Liberty, Aquarius. Equality, Libra. Fraternity or brotherhood, Gemini. All this activity is intensified by two facts. One is that the Earth is the hierarchical ruler of Gemini, and the other that Venus is the esoteric ruler. We have been discussing this. The initiate effect, the mass effect, is always delivered by means of the hierarchical ruler, and the effect upon the soul of disciples, the soul growth of disciples, is delivered by the esoteric ruler. So this movement of the of London, Great Britain, the United States, towards maturity, the disciplic maturity, and true service is promoted by the relationships here of Earth and Venus to Gemini. This intensifies all that goes on and leads to the unfoldment upon our planet of the consciousness of universality. Now that is, consciousness of universality is an Aquarian quality. An Aquarian quality, to which the word hierarchy is the key. So hierarchy and universality together, and hierarchy is an Aquarian body. Venus is also the Earth's alter ego, or in a sense higher ego, or setting the standard for what higher planetary egoity means, as it is called in the occult literature. Venus is, in a way, the other self of the Earth. You kind of wonder whether there might not be an absorption someday of Earth's principles into Venus before Venus is absorbed into Saturn and maybe eventually into Neptune. Well, those lines of absorption are very subtle, and they're not given, they're only hinted. Venus is also Earth's alter ego, as it is called in the occult literature, and its true supplementary and complementary planet. Now, that's a statement really to be watched, because at one point he talks about the supplementary planet, let's see, and another point, the complementary planet. The polar opposite, Venus is the polar opposite of Earth, and sometimes the complementary planet is referred to as Mars, or hinted as being Mars. Sometimes the complementary planet to Earth is hinted as Mars, maybe even said to be so. I'd have to look that up, but there is an idea there. You know, you kind of think of geometry. You think of the Pythagorean approach here. You think of supplementary angles and complementary angles. Okay. And I'm going to put that down because I think there's a hint going on here. Think of supplementary angles and complementary angles. Now the supplementary angle completes 180 degrees and thus relates to the pairs of opposites, thus Earth to Venus. Whoa, I think we're onto something here. This has the feeling of a hint that can be interesting. The complementary angle is not that. It does not complete 180 degrees. The complementary angle completes 90 degrees, and thus a conflicting square, of which Mars' relation to Earth can be a good example. So many of the conflicts here, at least the initial conflicts on Earth, are caused by Mars. And it can be considered, I think, the complementary planet of Earth, and the supplementary planet, or the true polar opposite, or the true alter ego, is Venus. So this is very interesting to me, and a new piece of possible information. So what does he say here? You have thus established a double-dual relationship. Whoa, okay. I guess if we're ever going to have double duals, it might as well be with Gemini and Mercury. That of Gemini itself, the two brothers, and that of Earth and Venus. And I've sometimes, and I want to throw Sirius and the Sun into that list of dual relationships. But Gemini itself, the higher brother and the lesser brother, and of Venus, which would relate to the higher brother, and Earth to the lesser brother. The Earth is peculiarly related to the brother whose light is waning. For it is not a sacred planet, as you know, and to that aspect of divinity which is material or substantial. This makes you wonder, what about the future of Earth? And yet Earth, as the center of the base of the spine of our solar logos, will be very necessary at the end of the solar system, as our solar logos will be taking either his fourth or fifth initiation. It will be especially necessary if somehow the solar logos manages to take the fifth cosmic initiation. We see that even in the case of such a great being, there is nothing guaranteed there. The time equation must be in the hands of these greater beings, and there is no assurance that the full potential, that is to take the fifth initiation in this second and sole solar system, will be achieved. You have thus established a double-dual relationship, that of Gemini itself and the two brothers, and that of Earth and Venus. And of course, in a way, from a certain perspective, I want to add Sirius and Sol. We can call our sun Sol, or maybe we can call our sun Helios. Okay. So in that case, there would be a connection between Sirius, the higher of the Geminian brothers, and Venus, and also a connection between the lower Geminian brother, Sol, and the Earth. And we would get out of this a six-pointed star, would emerge. A six-pointed star would emerge. And it's really hard to say which is the higher source, Sirius and the Sun, or the two brothers. I do believe that, in a way, the two brothers are actually higher sources, but we get so many reversals going on in these studies that there's no way to know for sure. The Earth is peculiarly related to the brother whose light is waning, for it is not a sacred planet, as you know. And to that aspect of divinity, it's also peculiarly related to that aspect of divinity, which is substantial, we can say, and comes from the previous solar system. Venus is closely related to the brother whose light grows stronger cycle by cycle, and thus to the soul whose nature is love. Kind of wonder here as well, you know, if there is a relationship of this waxing and waning between Sirius and our sun, is our sun going to be the waning factor and Sirius a waxing factor ever greater cycle by cycle? Just following out the law of analogy, we can ask ourselves that. So Venus, whose probably monadic ray is the second ray and whose submonadic ray is the sixth, is certainly related to the soul and to the nature of love. Now, this is a sentence which has always given me a lot of reason to think. It is this Gemini-Venus situation which lies behind the fact that our Earth is uniquely the planet of releasing sorrow and purifying pain. Well, we have duality. And duality is the cause of all suffering. The rending process. The experience of that which knows it is part of the whole and yet experiences itself as separate. Getting to the mystery of pain, it is difficult. But we see that there is a pull. See, all pulls, all rendings, all pulls can lead to rending. And rending, tearing, is painful because it separates that which naturally belongs together. So we have a pull going on between the higher and the lower, pairs of opposites. We have a pull going on between Venus and the Earth on the astral plane. Venus is the, in a way, allied to the upward pointing five-pointed star, the upward pointing pentagram, and Earth is presently allied in a way to the lower of the two, maybe Mars even more so. There's a pull between these, and it's painful as long as there is not acquiescence. Once Earth acquiesces to Venus, once the personality acquiesces to the soul, then the pain, such as it is experienced now, will end. There is needed acquiescence. How do you spell that? Acquiescence. There is needed acquiescence, which is the giving up, the Father, not my will, but thine be done. Earth saying, not my will, but thine, Venus, be done. Castor saying, not my will, but thine, Pollux, be done. The refusal to pull against the higher magnetism will release the pain, but that's an act of will. So, you know, it's the prodigal son deciding to return. So this is accomplished by an act of will, an act of acquiescence. The energy producing these releasing factors being focused through Mercury and Venus upon our Earth. So Mercury gives buddhi. Mercury gives buddhi, which is a harmonizing, loving, wise, releasing factor. Pure reason releases. Venus gives love and wisdom. And when these energies flow upon the earth and into humanity and into the human personality, acquiescence is produced. The pull of the soul becomes irresistible. And acquiescence emerges. The whole idea of quiescence, I can't spell this, quiescence, quiescence is achieved. I think I better look at that spelling of that word, quiescence, because it means a certain degree of quiet. Quiescence, Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-C-A. Quiescence is achieved, a very important acquiescence is there found. Meaning one is to know, to will, to dare, and to be silent. This is the giving up of the noise of the lower personal self and its elemental resistance. The energy producing these releasing factors are focused through Mercury and Venus upon the Earth. A new type of quiescence and Buddhic consciousness is achieved, and the conflict subsides. If there were not the pull towards the soul and towards love and towards the theme of this particular solar system, and if there were not the counter-pull based upon the previous solar system to which Earth is presently attuned in its lower nature, having a third-ray personality, then there would not be the rending pain. But when through an act of will, Father, not my will be done, but thine. This is found in Pisces. This is found in Leo. I guess it's found here in Gemini as well. When that acquiescence comes, that surrender, that giving up to the new aspect, the giving up of the third aspect to the second aspect, the pulling stops, and we have a intelligent cooperator with the higher intended love pattern, which is to become the norm in this solar system. You will see, therefore, the significance of the triangle of planets, in which I hinted in the treatise on cosmic fire, the Earth, Venus, Mercury. This is an elevatory triangle. There's also the triangle Earth, Venus, Mars. It's quite different. And it still is a more, emphasizes a state of greater struggle still. So Earth, Venus, Mercury, Venus, Mercury bringing release. Let's just think of it that way. Bringing release to the suffering of rending on our planet, of purifying pain and releasing sorrow. Or is it purifying sorrow and releasing pain? Planet of releasing sorrow and purifying pain. Well, okay. Releasing sorrow and purifying pain. Let me type that so I get it straight. Releasing sorrow, and it's just the order in which I have them that is correct. Planet of releasing sorrow. And purifying pain. Purifying pain. Make sure I got it right. Releasing sorrow and purifying pain. Now, you might all, you know, think, well, Saturn is really responsible here. Saturn is the planet of pain and so forth. But they all cooperate together. They supplement each other in such a way that the objectives of each one of the planetary logoi within our solar system will be rightly fulfilled. So you will see, therefore, the significance of that triangle of planets, which I hinted at in the treatise on cosmic fire. Earth, Venus, Mercury. The Tibetan warned us that he was going to discuss Gemini from a higher point of view, a more abstracted point of view, as it is one of the major subjective signs. Maybe he couldn't do that at first with Aries, because we had to start the whole process going in an understandable way. Certainly Aries is a sign of great abstraction, giving the will to be free of form. The highest type of abstraction, in a way. But he's holding to his promise, and he's giving us some quite abstruse cosmic relations here in this chapter. From certain angles, these are related to the personality of our planetary logos. That is a third-ray personality, right? I want to put that in. An elevatory, not elevator. So that's the third ray. The third ray personality of our planetary logos. So related to the personality of our planetary logos, which actually has quite a history, and our planetary logos has to recover from the problems of personality, basically, we've been told elsewhere. This is part of the mystery of Makara. What I'm going to do now is pretend, I'm going to go on here and say, well, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 103B, page 362, and beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 103C, page 362 also. 362. Okay. And I think we have just about reached a point. Yeah, we're the 2 hours is up, the hour for this program. But I'm just so fascinated by some of these cosmic relations and their importance to the, even to the human individual, the great astral pain on the astral plane being the result of these conflicts, the star of conflict Mercury, and it's almost looking like we can call Gemini the constellation of conflict. But unless there was such a, without such a power of intended redemption by the powers that be, we might just be happy here in our materiality because we would not have the vision and the sense of the upward pull towards a higher state. I mean, the spirit is always discontent, but the presence of this active pull of beautiful magnetic Venus toward the great soul states and of the higher brother of Gemini makes the pain acute because we are so stubbornly, taurianly resistant in our attachment to the residue of the previous solar system. That's our problem, and we're being weaned away from that.